Hey guys, what's up? Welcome to the show. Welcome to another Sunday night. We have Preacher Season 1, Episode 8, titled He Gone. I've got a fantastic panel of three other hosts. We're going to break down the episode for you for AfterBuzz TV. Thank you so much. We'll see you in 1 second, guys.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
But he could not forgive her.
It's always so somber and mellow when we open the show this way.
But we tried.
Real Texan right there.
Yeah. We try, guys. We try. We try to do a wonderful job on this show. Guys, welcome to Sunday night. Welcome to Preacher on AfterBuzz TV. This is the after show officially for the show based on the comic book that we all love so much. My name's Ben Bateman, and I have a fantastic panel here. On the end, respectfully, Mr. Frank Moran. How are you, sir?
Greetings and salutations, everyone. Thank you for watching this evening. You can find me on the Twitter at Happy Go Jackie.
Happy Go Jackie, I love that. Miss Roxy Stryer sitting next to Mr. Frank Moran.
Honestly, I'm just really happy to be here, y'all. You can find me everywhere at Roxy Stryer.
Lovely. And of course, we have the lovely Lucretia Lyon.
Hey, guys, and I'm actually the only real Southerner on this panel, but I'm very impressed by the accents here today.
Can we get a real definition of real Southerner, please?
I am actually from Texas, just like Jesse Custer himself. And of course, you can always find me at LACRETIALYON anywhere, since there is only one.
And I forgot to tell you guys, you can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram if you're so inclined. Let's get into the episode, guys. We've got a lot to talk about. So this was titled He Gone. It's the 8th episode of Season 1. I feel like we're kind of... Or Episode 7. My mistake. We're kind of winding in.
Oh, that's okay. Don't even worry about it.
Don't you go getting yourself in a huff.
No problem.
We're kind of winding in to the stretch run here, as they like to call it, the back stretch of Season 1. And... I think things are really starting to kind of round into form. What do you guys think about that?
I would agree with that opinion, Benjamin. But what I would say is that I feel like in this the entire 6 episodes preceding this,
yeah,
I wonder about the pacing issues. It's starting to pick up right now with episodes 6 and 7, but I feel a lot of the stuff previous to that maybe could have not been in the show, and we could have pushed things up, got things activated a little bit more this season.
Okay.
I don't disagree with you. I think that if we had gotten to episode 7 by episode 3, that we probably could have covered episode 15 by episode 6. So, you know, I feel you on that. But I actually am very excited that we did have to earn this moment, because I feel like I'm appreciating it more. And I think that tonight's episode was probably the best one so far.
Oh, I definitely agree with that.
The best episode so far? Mm-hmm. We all on the panel agree about
that. Best two for sure.
Okay. Okay.
Definitely.
I'm just curious, respectfully, Miss Roxy, if I may ask, the part that you said that the moment that we earned, what would that be for this episode?
Well, just this entire episode, I feel like is a moment that we earned, not necessarily one specific one, but there are a few ones that I absolutely love that I'll get into when we talk about the episode. Oh, British comes out, maybe I'll switch right now, or maybe I'll do a little Cassidy.
Guys, I'm noticing slowly but surely these accents are fading. I'm going to call...
Don't you do it, Benjamin. Don't you do it,
Ricky Bobby. I'm going to call scene. Let's just go back to normal, guys.
I don't know. I think the people in the chat were really digging it.
Were they
just
digging
saying.
It? Did we get some comments on it?
Yeah, we were getting some love.
Were they all positive?
Yeah, definitely. All really strong, good things. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So, I think that there's definitely an element of us earning it that I agree with. Some of the stuff in tonight's episode, particularly the flashback scenes, Jesse and Cassidy and the kind of like tense interaction there, the stakes behind their relationship, those are the things that I feel like really they've made us wait for. Now, I can't disagree that I think the first 5 episodes really took their time, but I also, this was the first episode tonight where I really sort of sat there and was like, okay, I have a pretty strong sense of how the season's going to end, and I can talk about it in predictions, but in terms of how this is going to end and then where it's going to go as far as the rest of the show, because they know they have all this rope from AMC, Seth and Evan, to make all these seasons. I really believe that this is an origin story is kind of what they decided to do for season 1. Like it is absolutely an origin story, and it's Odenkin canon. He's kind of, even in the context of the comic book, which we always like to point out, guys, that we've all read the book here, or at least parts of it. We don't try to give specific comic book spoilers during the show. During predictions at the end, we will have a spoiler alert where we will kind of give our actual, informed opinions based on that book. But the character of Odin Kincannon, he even here sort of feels like an irrelevant villain in the same sense that he is not irrelevant. He's just like an unimportant villain in the source material. And I feel like he's being set up as the big bad for season one in a way that won't have the strongest bearing on the rest of the story. That's just the sense that I get. Like, I think they're positioning him nicely as the villain for season one. He's going to be Jesse's hurdle. And I feel like that's what we're going to see as the season ends, is it's going to kind of catapult the whole story into the crazy, fast-paced, action-filled Preacher that we were expecting. They just wanted to take a season to get there.
Yeah, they wanted to take a season. They wanted to take maybe 6 episodes, which might be how long you need to give a show in order to appreciate it.
It's good, Rox.
Yeah, you think so? Yeah,
we called you a genius openly on the show last week when you weren't here, so just for what it's worth.
Oh. Basket it for a moment.
Oh my God. Yes. 6 episodes, and it was 6 episodes.
Yeah. I'm a TV expert, you might say. Yeah. I actually host some shows at AfterBuzz TV, so yeah. I know what
Did
I'm talking
not know
about.
That. Whoa.
Yeah, I know.
I certainly think that the first 5 episodes is going to come down to subjectivity, I think, for the viewer. Because yeah. for some people, and I think maybe and a couple of us here on the panel, yeah. frustrated about just, you know, some of the beats that kept on hitting again, like with Jesse and the lack of real connection between Jesse and Tulip.
Yeah.
So that now you start seeing it, you're wondering, oh, I wish that would happen sooner. But there's going to be other fans that have enjoyed that slow pace for the season. So I think it's going to be, your mileage may vary on how you felt about the structure of the season.
I'm telling you at this point, I don't mean to jump in here too much, but I have had now a half dozen conversations with people who are watching this show, have never read the comic book, barely even aware that it is a comic book, and they're glowing about it. Like, a couple of my friends who are very much into television are saying things like, this is the most unique show on TV, there's nothing like it, I love the pacing, the humor's so great. I mean, I think this is just one of those rare occasions where because of the way they handled the source material, it's just harder to watch if you're a comic book fan. I think this show is great for people who don't watch the comics. This has a 9.4 on IMDb. Yeah. 9.4.
Well, yeah. We really, in tonight's episode with flashbacks, veered off, which of course we will talk about at the end also. But what I will say is that, getting right into it, I officially hate Jesse. Like, without a doubt, in my mind, officially hate him.
Yeah.
Which is a very interesting place to be with the main character of the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Tulip said it right when she's like, dick.
Yeah, that's how I feel about him all the time. I don't like you.
Yeah.
I don't like you. I don't find you to be a redeemable character at this point either. So yeah. We'll see, but I mean, that is a big difference, and I think it is possible to do with shows. I mean, we saw it done with It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, where you hate the characters, and a couple other shows, like sometimes Orange is the New Black. There are all these shows where some of the characters are like, oh my God, I hate you, but I also can love you. I've yet to hit the I love you part, and I just hate him.
They're taking him on a journey because the biggest... And we should sort of start with just not the general, but like sort of what happened in tonight's episode. But you saw specifically with his relationship to Cassidy tonight, which I think was a great place to start for us. Obviously, Cassidy finds out from Tulip that, Jesse doesn't know what he is, even though he's told him 9 times, which he sort of has. We've seen him mention it a bunch of times in the show, but he's never really had to address it. And Cassidy really gets in his face about the fact that Eugene gets sent to hell. And you see this dark side of Jesse start to come out. And I think... when you say you hate him, we're not seeing the normal Jesse Custer that he will be as the show progresses. Like, this version of him that we're seeing now, this will all be in the rearview mirror, and he will come out the other end not as this character that we dislike. He will be a very likable character.
Maybe.
Eventually, I believe he will, because the juxtaposition of him going in and leading Bible study followed by him sitting there watching Cassidy burn and tell Tulip, you know, she's white trash, and Emily to get out and go home, like, that's just not... There's a reason that he's acting like a dick. It's because he's sitting in Bible study and he's struggling with what's going on, and he's not comfortable with Genesis, and he's made mistake after mistake, and he's trying to live by his father's word, which is super important. We'll talk about that during the flashback section, but I think that's really what you're seeing, and it's the transformation. The growth of Jesse Custer is what the season's about.
Yeah, because that whole dinner scene, he's just sitting there with that look on his face, and when we were laughing about it, because, yeah, I mean, it's just... It just says everything without saying it. And to me, Cassidy's, like, filling in his thoughts on the Coen brothers just to try and make it less awkward. And that was really funny part. But, yeah, it just showed, like, Jesse is just out of it. And he wants them all to go away because he knows what he's done is wrong, but he hates to admit it.
Yeah.
Like anyone.
And I think we'll see, as we talk more about the episode, both with Tulip and with Jesse, you just see, like, the weight and significance that a childhood promise can hold on throughout your entire life. You can put so much weight and stock behind something like that, and it can almost at some points kind of be like a prison to you.
And he's a preacher's boy from West Texas, just like Tulip says.
Yeah.
I almost had the accent there when I said
just
that.
Just like Tulip says. I know what you mean.
Every time you say Texas, it just happens.
He does hold on to the memory of his father so much. But, I mean, yeah, just getting back the conversation between him and Cassidy. I mean, you started to see the tension growing there. And then, obviously, Cassidy burns himself alive. And Jesse has to, I mean, in theory, what's the word I'm looking for? Extinguish his flame.
Defire him?
I had a stroke.
So, so what are we thinking? I mean, we see that Cassidy goes up in flames.
Yeah.
We see that he has the fire extinguisher, and we see that he brings the fire extinguisher inside. We don't see the in-between. Does he put him out, or does he let him burn?
He definitely puts him out. What he does with him, or where, or how, I'm just not sure. Obviously, Cassidy's going to show back up. They didn't just kill Cassidy off-screen.
No, but who knows? Cassidy could have... Somebody else could have found him when Tulip walked out. He could have rolled under something. He could have put himself out. That doesn't mean that Jesse necessarily does.
Yeah.
Put him all the way out.
He could be gone for an episode. That could easily happen.
That would be terrible, because he's by far the best character on the show.
He is the best character.
I wouldn't want to see him gone either.
It was interesting to see Cassidy play such the role of conscience this episode. Mm. For somebody that, and self-admittedly, just says that, you know, I am just like the lowest of the low here.
Self-obsessed.
Yeah.
He's a great character, and he's a great character because he's a sympathetic character. Do you guys notice that they're doing this thing where, and again, this will be a very, very loose nod to the book, but just sort of that book really was driven by three characters, and every other character was essentially comic relief. Like, occasionally you'd have villains, and then you'd have, like, passerbys. They would just meet along the way, and everybody's kind of comic relief in the book. In a way that we've talked about this before, Root is becoming almost like a sympathetic character. You really feel for him. He's looking for Eugene. Eugene's gone. What's the damnedest thing? I can't find my son. Even though he said that horrible thing to him, it's like you actually feel for him, whereas, again, in the comic, he's just this comic relief punchline.
I didn't feel for him at all.
Oh, really?
Not one bit. I was like, you son of a bitch. You did this. You said the meanest thing to your son. You don't treat him well, and I'm sure it's very difficult to have a son in that position. And I felt a little worse for him when we got the backstory on Eugene, which none of us had guessed that it happened.
Yeah.
No, yeah.
But by that point, I felt a little worse for him, but this is your son. You are his dad, and he is missing, and you did something really, really mean to him, and I didn't feel bad for him.
Can we talk about that? We got the history on Eugene, by the way. That was totally surprising. We find out that he loved Tracy Loach. She was the prom queen. She was the darling of the town. Eugene loved her, professed his love. She rejected him, and he blew her head off.
I don't think that's what happened.
You don't?
No. I don't think he shot her and then shot himself. I think that there's something that isn't being said here, because talk about a different version than we see in the book. Talk about having completely different motives as a character.
Why do you not believe that could be the real story?
Because if that was the real story, then I think that when Cassidy's sitting there and says, and so he deserves to go to hell for that, kind of a little bit, you know.
Right.
At that point, I lose all faith in Eugene, all respect for him, and I think he's a character that we're supposed to like. I won't ever be able to like him after that, honestly.
If that's really the case.
Right.
And to me, it doesn't fit the Eugene that we see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that's why it's like, is that the whole story? Because, yeah, this Eugene who wants to be punished and wants to, you know, earn his way back into God, this is a guy who you couldn't see just shooting her.
Right.
I mean, that's why I thought it was a drunk driving accident, because while that's still pretty bad, it's an accident.
Still under the impression that maybe he tried to shoot himself and something backfired and hit her, or something happened that was an accident. But I just can't picture him turning a gun on somebody and shooting them, and then that's awful.
Well,
and then how did he get away with that too?
Well, how was he out? We've got Maya Patton says maybe Roxy, but Jesse doesn't have the right to send him there.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But he says, so he deserves to go to hell, not so he deserves for you to be the one that sends him there.
Right.
And I'm not even saying that he deserves to go to hell, because who am I to judge somebody, and we're not sure. But as a character on the show, as somebody who is very likable, how do we move on from that?
So speaking of likable, did you want to actually add something on Tracy Letch?
Oh no, I feel like we may not. I think the facts of the are what we are supposed to believe, but yeah. We don't know like the emotional content between all those actions. We don't know any of the conversations that happened between Tracy and Eugene, that you know, and what the emotional context was of Eugene having a gun and putting it to Tracy's head. We don't know what that was like. But I don't disagree with the facts.
Yeah.
But we just don't know what the kind of emotional context of that is.
I agree with you guys that it would strange if they really decided to take the story there. It's one of those storytelling things where you're just like, you have to know the way an audience feels, and you're making a very bold decision if you're going to try to justify that as an audience, because he's obviously already, you know, you're already making somebody as grotesque looking as possible with them having a face that looks like an arse. That's like the, so he has to, if he's not going to be the sweetest, most redeemable character, if he's actually going to be somebody who tried to murder the prom queen because she rejected him, then what are you left with? At that point, he just becomes that kind of a despicable character.
Some interesting thoughts in the chat. Sky the Boss 96 says, I think Eugene has a mental illness. Andre says, could it be that he pointed the gun but didn't mean to shoot it?
I could see that, yeah.
And then continued, maybe she liked Eugene and somehow that was an issue. And then Anime Man, Jess is acting more like a judge and not a preacher, which is true.
Yeah. You're witnessing the breaking point. So it'll be nice to know that fairly soon, you know, we're going to see that, I think, the real Jesse Custer. But speaking of likable characters, Tulip and Cassidy have some good moments in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
And just Tulip and just, like, sort of learning, understanding her more and more and more. She's changed her approach now. She's trying to cook. She's trying to...
When you say speaking of a liking character, likable character, which one of them were you talking about?
Oh, which is just before the final thought on Eugene that we were talking about Cassidy.
Yeah, but which one? Tulip or Cassidy?
Cassidy.
Okay. Because I thought you were coming around on Tulip because I know you were having a little bit of an issue with her.
I did come around on her last week, and actually we had some comments that I responded to because somebody was like, Suit Guy's right. Tulip's the worst. She's so annoying. And I was like, she has to this point been annoying, but... And also my name's Ben, by the way.
you know what, Suit Guy?
Suit Guy.
I started to come around to her last week because I like the idea that Tulip is willing, because Jesse's so important, to not just like bash her head against a wall, but she's saying, okay, I see the angle here. The church is important to him right now. I'm going to try to get on board and help, because if that's what he wants right now, and this is my boyfriend, this is who I'm going to be around, if that's what I got to do, if I got to go to church, you see her tonight in the beginning of the episode. She's sitting there just leaning her head. And I like that, you know? I like that she's trying, even though it's not her look, really, to go to church and make dinner, but she is giving it an effort.
Can we be clear about something? Are they dating? Is that his girlfriend right now? Because she keeps saying it, but...
No, she's not letting it go.
Yeah, she won't let it go. I don't feel like she is his girlfriend.
No, but if you say it enough, then it's supposed to be true.
It happens.
But yeah, I mean, we haven't seen him reciprocate anything.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah. But
she did look so pretty in her little outfit, though. Oh my God.
She's a hottie.
I like the look for two of them. Yeah.
She did. Now, Cassidy also thinks so. And why'd we make love, Partridge? She didn't say that.
Yeah.
To Jesse.
But it's interesting that it uses the word make love, that the term make love. Yeah.
Why'd you make love to me the other night?
I want them together.
You do?
Yeah, totally.
Because you hate Jesse so much.
I see absolutely nothing between them. Do you guys know? Somebody told me this, and I had no idea that supposedly 5 days before they started shooting, the actor that plays Jesse and the actress that played Tulip broke up. They had been dating, and 5 days before they started filming, the two of them broke up.
Ruth Negga and Dominique Cooper broke up 5 days before filming?
That's what I heard the other day. Wow. And I'm not trying to spread rumors that aren't true. I haven't checked my facts on this, but apparently 5 days before they started shooting, they broke up.
That's interesting.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. And also clear why I see zero chemistry between them.
None. Yeah, unbelievable.
I'll see if I can get confirmation from anybody in the chat, which is a very credible source,
yes,
by the way.
That's right. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, the chat's interested in a lot of things. Tulip is the ex-girlfriend of Jesse. Roxy is smoking hot. We've got a lot of things going on in the chat.
A lot of credible sources
in there. Hey, you know, I'll take it all day.
I mean, that's sort of, I think, the point that we've seen Tulip and Cass. You know, Cass is getting pretty frustrated. We do see a little bit more stuff with Tulip and her dad, it looks like.
I thought Uncle,
maybe. Yeah.
Because they talked about the uncle was the drunk when we go to the flashback of Tulip.
Yeah.
Mom was in jail. Uncle was a drunk.
That's we talked about this a little last week, but she's the biggest departure in terms of, and this is somebody who's, I think maybe Dave was saying it last week, that it's very clear Garth Ennis, when writing the book, didn't really know how to write a female character all that well. So she's got her strong moments, but she's also kind of a hollow character in some ways in the comic book, which is why it seems like maybe they did make the decision to change the character so much here. But I do find it interesting that they've decided to kind of give Tulip this, like, kind of white trash background. They keep selling it. They keep selling that she you know, she doesn't know how to cook, and she and her mom was in a whorehouse, and all these things. Like, they really, she, you know, she was fighting as a kid. Like, they just, all these things that they, she doesn't seem like a lady.
Yeah, no, I might enjoy all these revelations and stuff if we're following more closely to the original storyline and we're on the road and we're doing road tripping and stuff like that, and we're finding out these little character details along the way. But being stuck at Anvil this whole season feels like we're just kind of retreading a lot of the same material.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think it's making Tulip a little more three-dimensional than she was in the comics, though. Like, giving her this backstory makes us feel for her, and we're not like, oh my god, she's so annoying. You're like, I get why she's so attached to Jesse, especially with the flashbacks.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
And we get a very own little action sequence. Really, the only exciting action we get for this episode is a little parkour sequence trying to rescue her uncle's pants.
Yeah. Yep. Parkour.
It's very interesting because I have many times in my life been described as somebody who has a more masculine personality, but I related so much more to the Tulip in the comics at times than I do to this version of the Tulip.
Yeah.
In certain ways, because I do feel like some of the things she does, even though they are trying to be the aggressive, more manly thing to do, actually are very feminine. Like, to,
yeah.
Which is good. I think it's more a more realistic character, but she is less relatable to me, which is funny that you said that Garth doesn't know how to write female.
Yeah, it's a point Dave's made a few times, and it's just interesting when you really think about it. Like, there's just such a focus in that story on those characters, and specifically on Jesse and Cass. Like, it's such a male-driven, like, American sentimentality and this romance of American history. And that's clearly... I mean, Garth Ennis is a war comic writer. He writes war stories. So Preacher is, you know, obviously, like, that's, it would make a lot of sense that then the female would be a little bit less natural.
We're getting some mixed reviews in the, not reviews, but answers in the chat right now, by the way, about their relationship. Some people are saying they're still together.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we'll have to see. Maybe there was a breakup, a fight, maybe while they were filming this. I don't know.
We just, oh, the actors.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Okay.
They decided just to really reflect the character arc. So it's like, as long as our characters aren't together, we won't be together.
Yeah.
That's what. Very method.
For the record, at the premiere, I did not see them interact once. And I spent a decent amount of time hanging out with Dominique Cooper. A lot of time hanging out with Joe Gilgan and zero time with her. Maybe she wasn't there, actually. I don't remember it.
That was a suit guy exclusive right there.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Hashtag suit guy exclusive.
At the after party, not at the premiere itself. Of course she was at the premiere. But nonetheless, that is interesting. That is interesting. We'll have to look that up.
I'm picking you up next week, Us Weekly.
Yeah.
For me.
So let's talk a little more about those flashbacks, because the flashbacks were maybe the most satisfying part of the whole episode tonight.
Yeah, and I love that we kept coming back to them. That's when this show is great, when there's a flashback and then we go back to it and it's not just a random flashback at the top of the show and we have no idea what it's about or referencing.
Yeah, they're definitely doing a good job now. Like, there was a few little Easter eggs. They do this every episode. I thought this was maybe going to be the first episode until, like, the midway point where we got zero Easter eggs as far as, like, comic book references, but by halfway they gave us a few. But I do like, so we find out that, like, she kind of lived with them or was staying with them. She got taken by some sort of, like, a foster parent, it looked like. Social services.
I don't think that was a parent.
And it sounds like, you know, she says to him, till the end of the world. So they kind of establish that from a very, very young age they're, like, this in love. And
so after, the knowledge that you have is not the knowledge that is applicable to the show, and to me, watching this, it had nothing to do with being in love in this moment.
Well, just taking care of each other, you didn't get that. It's like, she looks at him, she says, till the end of the world, and then she says, if you don't say it doesn't mean anything, and he says it, like...
Yeah, he says it, passed out, like, facing the other way. It was totally a friendship thing to me.
Okay, it's a friendship thing, but then there's, after she gets sent away, how much he's fighting and yelling and screaming, and
like
he says...
Like siblings.
He actually says, God damn it, in front of his dad. Open the goddamn door in front of his father, which to me is like, that's, he's truly extending himself.
Yeah, until that moment, I always felt like, because as you see, it's always been more one-sided where Tulip is chasing after Jesse, and that's how it seemed up until that moment when he thought he was going to lose her. And so Jesse is very much like most men, I guess you can say, that he didn't want to man up until he thought he was going to lose her. So he's running after the car. But yeah, I mean, in the whole other interactions, you're like, yeah, they're more like siblings than a couple. Yeah.
The strangest thing about this was not Jesse, but John, and how he reacted to all this. And when she does get taken and Jesse's pissed and John says, because she's an O'Hare, all right, there's always going to be trouble.
Yeah.
Trouble. I don't know if I like John in this version of the story either. I mean, I I feel for him because he gets shot. We don't know exactly what the circumstances around that, but I don't know if I like his character or if I like Jesse's character.
Well, stuff as a preacher who is supposed to be serving all, being a very judgmental priest, and that very much affects Jesse's actions in the future when what happens with Eugene and he gets banished to hell.
Right.
Very much a judgmental sense of that, where he felt like he was heading there, I just made that judgment call and did it myself and not really having any kind of regrets, although a little different than John, it really does eat at him
and,
subconsciously.
Yes. And talk about being the judge, jury, and executioner, we also saw him beat his son.
Yep.
So we saw that, now we've seen this. Are you a preacher? What are you? Because I don't know how to feel about you anymore.
I mean, yeah, that is interesting. They've given him a little more gravity, the John Custer character. The John Custer character, again, in the comic book is fairly... He's kind of a simple character. He's a Vietnam vet who... And obviously we don't have Vietnam in this story, or he wasn't in Vietnam. But we have... He's a Vietnam vet who comes back and gets married and has a kid, and he's just this West Texas, old Texas guy who loves John Wayne. They did give us the John Wayne thing,
yeah,
which I liked.
Yes.
The Tulip says John Wayne is Jesse's favorite... which was great. It's the first time they've made reference to John Wayne in this whole story.
I was surprised because at the premiere, didn't they tell you they weren't mentioning John Wayne?
What Garth Ennis said to me was, I asked him, because there's a whole element of the story that, it's a spoiler, so we won't go there, but I basically said, what about John Wayne? And he said, we can't really tell the story that way because for legal reasons, I don't even know if we could show that character on screen. But I don't think, referencing that it's his favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, not Ryan Philippe.
Yeah,
that's Cassidy's guess,
who I low-key love.
Yeah.
I also just loved Cassidy's Coen Brothers breakdowns. Like, they were pretty fantastic. Like, yeah. The whole dinner sequence was really good.
But didn't you want him to break down some sort of Seth Rogen creation?
Oh, sure.
Be very meta. Yeah.
I thought that would be super fun. It was like your prediction early on that we were going to have them come in some way.
Danny McBride come in.
That would have been awesome.
Going back to the childhood scenes, given how he feel about Jesse's promise to his father, or how his feelings about all of everything went down, holding him in a prison now as an adult.
Yeah.
If you didn't know the context of the series, and you're just going by what you've seen, I could easily understand why people would think that Tulip's childhood promise there until the end of the world with Jesse could just be her holding out of something that's not really there.
Kids.
Yeah.
I do think this is really interesting. When they say the line, the John Wayne line there, the original line in the comic book when he says, when he's on his knees, and we've now heard him say it four times, you have to be one of the good guys, Jesse. Why? Because there's way too many of the bad. And that's the Jesse promise that he makes his dad, which is maybe my favorite line in the entire story. However, originally the full line there, because of the John Wayne connection, is what do we learn? He says, you don't take no shit off no fools. You judge people from the way they look, or from what's inside them, not the way they look. And you got to be one of the good guys because there's way too many bad. That's the full line, right? But we haven't heard him say any of that yet. The fact that the John Wayne reference came up makes me think, why? Why on earth would you not throw it in? At this point, they've said it so many times, I can't imagine they're going to give us the extended version of the line at some point.
No, it wouldn't even make sense chronologically anymore for them to give it to us because we've connected those dots.
But I'm just why? That's such... The length of the line is such an important thing.
Because I think that for some people, it might get lost... It obviously stuck with you very clearly, but you have to be one of the good guys. It's short, it's concise, and
it's
know exactly what you want to remember. So I think that the point of the entire what you just recited is that you need to be one of the good guys.
Yeah.
And interesting that he tells his son to follow a kind of credo or motto, and yet he himself doesn't really act in that with his actions with Tulip
at all. Much of a good guy, yeah.
Yeah.
He totally judges Tulip. Yeah, right. Yeah, completely. I think that's interesting. You've pointed that out a few times now, Roxy, that John Custer is just, maybe he's not that good of a dude.
I think that when you're on your deathbed, so to speak, you probably, a lot flashes before you, and even if he isn't the best guy, he probably still wants for his son to be the best guy. So maybe he's having regrets in that moment.
Yeah. But, I mean, his son is only picking up some of the... I mean, he himself not being the best of guys right now.
Right.
So, yeah, and a lot of the chat agrees. They're like, John's a dick just like Jesse, just father like son.
Yeah. So the way that scene ends, after Tulip gets taken away, Jesse prays for his dad to get killed, is that two men walk into the... Or two people, which we don't know if they're men. We just see their feet. Two people walk into the house. He says, get under the bed. Jesse hides under the bed.
That'd be pretty big feet.
Yeah. Well, it could be women. Who knows? They walk into the room. They're standing at the foot of the bed. Next shot is that we see the flashback we've seen before now where John gets shot through the head in front of Jesse. He says, don't cry. We Custers don't cry. We fight. So these are two characters that I think we're all curious, who is this? They've alluded to it a bunch, and this is something, if you do know, wait for spoilery predictions. We'll definitely reference that in the spoiler predictions. But
certainly one connection you make is the tattoo that's on the arm, same thing that Jesse has on his back.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So, okay, let's talk about some of the peripheral characters that are going on. We have Emily. Emily's in the story. She's kind of just like... she's just kind of drifting through the story. It's a little... it's so weird, like, how they've positioned her. She kind of professes her belief. It's not quite her love for Jesse.
I feel like she censored herself in that moment, though.
She totally did. She totally did. And she has a little moment with Cassidy, too, in this episode, where she's like, you know things about him. You know, everybody has their secrets kind of a thing. And then she says, "When from the moment you came back, Jesse, I just always believed you." And Jesse says, "Well, that was stupid."
Yeah. I love that. It was such a burn.
I love that, too. I'm very curious to see what they do with her character, though, because she needs something. We already know that she's screwing the mayor, so that gives her a little bit. Okay, for a couple episodes, I'll let that slide.
She's always pooping.
You can't just be the character. She poops a lot. You can't just be the character that's in love with Jesse.
Right.
I need you to be more than that, and I know that they know that because they're good storytellers, so I'm excited to see where we go with her in the way that her character changes.
Yeah, because I really love her scenes with Cassidy. I think that they have a funny little bond there. I don't know if I want to see romance, but just I like them being in scenes,
Yeah. That scene on the porch was a good scene. I liked that scene. I liked the two of them together. But yeah, she's definitely hard to understand what the point of her... I mean, you understand the point of her character from a very basic sense, but if you strip away this whole idea that they needed to take 5 episodes to get us to this point, she's part of the problem. She's one of those things that's just like, this is just this unending sort of monotonous like detail that's like, why couldn't we have just not had any of that drama? Just skipped it.
It's because it's just floating around in this, like, nobody's speaking what we all know is right there, and nobody's really getting to the heart of it.
I love A. Wilson's comment right now. Mm-hmm. Emily is super thirsty. Yeah. Someone needs to get her a long glass of water to go with tulip salt.
Yeah. So, interesting point here that Maya Patton just pointed out. I don't understand why she'd lie. She overheard Cass called Jesse out on doing something to Eugene. So, she does protect Jesse there when Sheriff Root is in the room.
She did.
Which they don't address. And also, Jesse doesn't address it. He just tells her to go home. Would you guys think that was weird?
Yeah.
I mean, it just really felt like he was pushing everyone away because he knows what a bastard he's been, but it was still like, Emily just lied to the police for you.
Is there any shot at all that when, because I'm trying to take what Jesse says very literally, when Jesse says go to hell, go to hell, go to hell, Eugene could be someplace at like a bar named Hell or somewhere and he's lost and trying to make his way back to us and Jesse's trying to get him out from the ground, but really Eugene is in Hell, which is a mall somewhere
maybe.
North Carolina.
I don't think so, because I think we've learned Jesse's words are so literal, unless he gets super specific with it, that I mean, I feel like he is, I think we got to make the leap that he is in really Hell.
Yeah, but where's the closest Hell? You don't know. Maybe there's like a Hell's Watering Hole on 44th and Main.
I mean, I know what you're going for. And it would be the kind of satirical, pop culture-y humor that they could build in. It would also make it really surprising and fun to have Eugene just show back up out of nowhere, which would be a little bit consistent with like a whole different part of the story, but it would sort of lend itself well to one of the storylines in the comic. Totally later, but if they wanted to do that, I guess.
Yeah, I think that it would be funnier if it was just like Hell, Wyoming, or you know, just. But I don't see them doing that.
I was also asking because maybe he vanished out of the building. Maybe she's not lying. Maybe she did see him start going somewhere, and he was exiting to Hell. It looked to me like she was lying, but maybe she saw something that we didn't.
It would be interesting. I wish we could have heard more from Cassidy, because Cassidy said he saw everything.
Yeah.
I mean, and he was, as the camera pans up, he was up there, up on the balcony, so he saw what exactly happened.
Yeah, I mean, it is interesting. Somebody here says, that you can't physically make... Wait, I've just missed the line. What is it? I've heard Custer can't actually make someone do... They can't physically do. And that's true.
Huh.
Otherwise, Cassidy would have just been flying when he was like, fly. Cassidy jumps, falls to the ground. He can't teleport someone to Hell. I mean, in theory.
Yeah.
In theory. We haven't seen him be able to do anything crazy like that, right?
Sky the Boss 96 has a good one. Eugene is probably in a sex dungeon called Hell.
Yeah.
I like the sex dungeon idea.
Yeah, she lied to go to the friend zone. So, yeah, I mean, you could be totally right, Rox. That could be a thing that's happened they've decided to fool us with, and Jesse's having this whole revelation. The black humor there that goes along with him having this crisis of identity could totally be like he's digging his way, because at the end of the episode, he's digging under the church and screaming, come back, come back, come back.
Or Duke Chronic says, what's Eugene's hell? Which
right.
could be, you know, maybe he's at Tracy Loach's, like, sitting in there and has to just stay watching her, because... I mean, we'll talk about the Odin stuff, but Jesse's words can be manipulated in a weird way.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the Odin stuff, because that's where we end with the episode. He got Donnie dressed up in his regalia. You've got all
this
the
is
Odin...
wild to watch.
You got all the Odin Quincannon meat and power guys. And this is after Jesse has sat down and said to Odin... Odin's like, I'm not a man of God. I'm not convinced.
No, he says, I'm not a Christian.
I'm not a Christian. Give me your church. I had the mayor look over and Jesse's like, I'm not giving the church. And he's like, you promised. He's like, I don't care what we talked about. So Jesse's just like, no, even though you're saying this, I don't honor our deal at all. Get out of here. So now he's continually using the power, the voice of God, and he's not honoring it. I mean, he's defacing it over and over again.
Well, because he doesn't possibly believe that he is not serving the word of God, because he told them to. So I think that Jesse really doesn't believe that's happening, and
right.
he thinks that this guy's just trying to pull one over on him.
Right. He's also, I think, just unwilling to accept that he's wrong. What's up, Frank?
Yeah, unwilling to think that whatever, much like Quincannon's God, it may not be the Christian God. It could be whatever it is that, you know, meat and power related that he would pray to.
I think we all have an idea of what
it
is.
Yes.
But, I mean, Jesse is just standing there, and we've got this army of people coming after the church. What I do like about that is that they're setting up a conflict that's going to make Jesse be decisive. Because, I mean, either have to use the word, but it feels like he's getting a little tired of using the word to solve his problems. Kind of feels like Jesse's going to have to roll up his sleeves a little bit, which is important.
Well, because I feel like him trying to solve his problems has only made things worse.
Yeah.
So I can understand why you'd want to get rid of the word.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see Jesse. And we tend to not talk about the scenes from next week's Preacher because it's not in this episode. But we can reference a little bit in the predictions. And some of the scenes from next week looked awesome.
Yeah, really amazing.
Looked really, really good.
I agree.
Any other thoughts before we move into predictions, guys?
I'm good.
I wouldn't want to go up against this army. They look like a bunch of meat-loving freaks.
And
they
it's so very Alamo-esque, which I thought was really cool, because also in Odin's office, he has a model of the Alamo, which,
right.
you know, Texas history, that's probably one of the most iconic moments, you know, lasting 13 days. Everyone dies in the end, but it was just the... what helped Texas win their independence from Mexico. So,
spoiler alert.
I do question some of the pacing, though, because we've had some other storylines that have kind of dangled. We've got the cowboy still out there in terms of flashbacks and where that's going.
Yeah.
We've also got our bus driver who's just, you know, we've seen a couple of shout-outs in the background, the bus driving by at night, but we've never really
followed
up on that story.
We've got the people in the bedroom now.
Yeah. So I feel like, I don't know, like with only three episodes left, what's going to be served this season, or is it things are going to really resolve at all for some of these things?
I'm so ready for predictions. So what we're going to do right now, guys, is we're going to get into predictions, and these will be the official TV show related predictions.
And now you're after Buzz TV predictions.
So this is based on what we're seeing in the show. We will then do our sign offs, and we'll do a quick little 3-4 minutes of comic book related discussion, spoilery predictions that if you guys don't want to hear because you're just watching the show, you can tune out, turn it off.
Can we talk about the predictions, the scenes from next week during this part?
Yeah, this part we can talk about predictions.
Okay, so in the scenes from next week, what it looked like is in order for Jesse to get Eugene back and make a deal with the angels, he has to give up the thing inside him into the coffee can, and then they'll help him get Eugene back.
And they could be effing with him totally and like not actually know where he is because they're just trying to connive him to get Genesis, so he could just actually be in Hell, Michigan or something like that.
Right, but I'm still not certain that these angels have any idea how to get this thing out of Jesse, even if they wanted to.
Yeah.
They can sing to it.
And the fact is that Genesis may not want to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, they may not be able to get it out of
him.
Right, right, right. That's a good try.
Yeah, because to me, Fior and DeBlanc in the preview didn't seem to agree on being able to get Eugene out. And that's why it's like, are they screwing with him?
We've seen that happen a couple of times, and usually one of them is messing with the other or whatnot.
Right.
So I agree. I'm not sure.
I think what I liked about the scenes from next week, and I think what you're going to see is, I kind of alluded to this with him rolling up his sleeves and getting his hands dirty. Like, he's so clearly at a breaking point right now where he's so frustrated with the way things are going. He's pushing everybody away. He's pushed away Tulip. He really insulted her in this episode. I think you're going to see Jesse get into a straight up fist fight with Odin's people. He's holding a gun in that scene. I want him to just start firing on people. I mean, the thing is, as soon as he makes that town like no longer like copacetic, like he starts killing people or like drawing national attention, like police coming in, that's when I think the story really takes off. It's all under this umbrella right now. Everything inside the town, it's kind of okay, and it's all just contained. We're not into the whole scope of the world yet, which they've obviously alluded to with the scenes where we see the guy in a white hat, we see the cowboy. We're gonna get there. It's just gonna take a minute.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I saw somebody talking about in the chat earlier was having, because I know that DC's other shows do crossovers, they were talking about having a Vertigo crossover. This is just something somebody was wanting in here, which would mean that we would do an iZombie, a Lucifer, Preacher crossover, which to me seems like we're in completely different places.
Oh, yeah.
Would be a very weird, intense thing. But would you guys like to see any sort of crossover?
No. As I will mention for the 100th time on AfterBuzz TV, and I believe this is why it might be coming back, John Constantine... A crossover. I mean, Matt Ryan, because especially with Hell.
From what we learned with Arrow, we don't need Constantine the show to be on for us to have a Constantine crossover, because that character is popping up left and right everywhere.
And the difference between DC Universe and the Vertigo Universe is, for the most part, Vertigo titles, except for like Constantine, Swamp Thing, a couple other things, are all creator-owned titles. Mm-hmm. So you're not going to mix and match creator-owned universes.
Yeah, I agree. The tones are completely different.
I also would be... I mean, I always say this when we talk about Preacher, but Preacher was regarded as one of the two or three or five greatest comics ever written. And Constantine, Garth Ennis has a really good run on that, so he actually is familiar with the source material, as well as Alan Moore has an incredible run on that book.
Oh, that's
which
the best.
Is so Hellblazer and John Constantine, I mean, that's like legendary. iZombie is like fun, people like it, but I would be kind of insulted if they decided to mix those three. It would not make any sense to me.
But like something like this, Sky says the Angels need a spin-off and crossover. The Angels going over to iZombie would be totally awesome.
I'm so into the Angels thing. But let's do a quick sign-off, guys, and then we're going to give you guys 3 to 4 minutes of spoilery comic book discussion. So where can the folks find you, Frank?
You can find me at Happy Go Jackie.
Ms. Dry?
I'm everywhere at Roxas Dry.
And, of course, I'm at LACRETIALYON, since there is only one.
That spells the Crucial Lion, folks, if you just didn't know that. But my name is Ben Bateman. You can find me at Ben Bateman Media on Twitter and Instagram. I don't have a Snapchat yet. I soon will have one. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you guys next week. Let's get into some spoiler predictions. Can we get a spoiler alert?
Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
All right. So... let's talk about a couple things. This one had a lot. So first of all, flashback scene.
Yeah, that's what I want to start with, because I feel like they're trying to Cory and Topanga us right now. But the actual story of how they got together is better than this story.
Being kids.
Better is not the right word, but if you want me to be romantically invested, I'm not into the brother-sister thing. It's seeming incestual for me. I don't know what it is, and maybe we'll go to flashbacks as they're teenagers or later in life, and I'll feel more interested in it.
But it's the same thing like with Flash, too.
Yeah,
I don't need to see Iris and Barry as kids being brother and sister. It makes me tough to buy that relationship present day.
Right.
Same thing with this.
I totally agree, and that's what I always say about that relationship, and then they turn this one into just the same thing, and I'm like, it's gross.
When they have a great story, I don't know why we're doing this. Yeah. Why are we going back and making them be childhood...
Well, because there's that great scene in the book when they meet, where she sees him at a bar, Tulip's all edgy, and Jesse's with some he's some boring girl, and she walks up and she lights a cigarette for him, and she just straight steals him, and she's an older woman too. She's like 3 or 4 years older. Like, that is such a better story for the immediate.
Oh, yeah.
But also, part of the point is that she doesn't know his childhood. She doesn't know his dad's childhood, or the situation around it, or where he's from, or how he grew up, or what he's been... all of those things. Now, how are we going to deal with that? Is it because she's been taken away, so there's years that are missing?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah.
Could be. Because Jody... so, the two guys are Jody and TC, we're assuming. Unless they're going to change that
drastically. Or women.
Yeah, or women. And he does make reference in an episode or two ago that a guy who was mean as hell taught me how to fight. And that's Jody, I'm assuming. That would be break my heart if it wasn't Jody. So I think because they keep walking us up to this point, we may get that actual flashback here very soon. Like the real flashback where we start to meet Grandma and the family, which I'm hoping they keep that pretty accurate, because that's the greatest story. It's the greatest Preacher story. It's the best one. And I'm hoping they can find a way to weave it all back together.
And given what we know, like, the, at least the first storyline for the comic ends, I predict that Emily's not making it out of the season. Because yeah. I feel like yeah. she's like going to be one of the big motivators for Jesse to get his head on straight and kind of do what he needs to do.
I honestly would not be disappointed if we, I mean, the way it ends, where the church blows up and everyone dies in the beginning of the story, if that's kind of how they end this season, I think you could lose most of the characters in this town. I don't think it would really affect much of the story going forward.
Except yeah. Miles. We love Miles.
We do love Miles.
Miles to heaven.
That's right. Yeah. Just in Austin that day. Yeah.
I just really hope that Till the End of the World is done justice, because yeah. that is very important to me, and them mentioning that in this episode didn't pull at my heartstrings quite the way that I wanted it to.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah. I think those are the big points. We kind of talked about the John Wayne stuff a little bit.
Right.
And I mean, I don't think we're going to see John Wayne, talking to John Wayne. I just don't. I hope we get the coffin, all that stuff, the stuff you were saying. So.
What would be awesome, though, is if we could get the Big Lebowski himself to play John Wayne like he did in Intrigue Red.
Your mind needs to be part of this show.
If yes, Garth Ennis was just messing with me, and in fact we do get the John Wayne thing, I would love it. It would be amazing. That's just one of the things that I really miss. There's a couple, I mean, the Vietnam stuff and the John Wayne stuff, it's hard to do in this era, though.
The other thing is the Arsfaith stuff, really quick. I think that there's no way, based on the comics, how he tried to commit suicide, that they would change his character so that he tried to kill somebody else first. That would be a really...
Yeah, it would be a total bait and
totally
switch.
Different character. We're,
this is what I think, is that I just think the season's going to end, and this is truly an origin story. They'll have more money. There'll be crazier stuff in the second season. I think it's going to start to resemble the tone of the comic, the action tone of it, far more. Odin is just going to be, I think, kind of like the season one villain. Like, I don't think he's going to be a long-time character in the show. Or at least that's what I hope. And I do think we meet the Saint of Killers. I think we're getting that walk up with his backstory, because he's going to get up out of that coffin and he's going to start killing people. And that's going to... Cassidy will come back and try to save him with the truck move. That's where I think it ends. That's, I think, how the season ends. So, anyway, that pretty much does it, guys. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you guys for watching the show. We will see you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Alicia.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
Partner.
Buzz you later.
People do seem to be liking this show.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.